Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds and Canes Monday night. David Poyle met with the media today. John Hines met with the media today. So it is a big day because, quite frankly, a lot of people aren't going to be doing much talking when Monday comes around. Now, they'll have their morning skate, and I'm sure Adam Vingan will have all of the updates and everything you need to know like he always does. Adam Vingan from The Athletic joins us now in the program. Adam, we're so close to game number one. I want to start with this. I give the Predators a 20% chance of winning this series, which I don't think is terrible. I mean, it's an 80% chance of not winning the series, but again, I think it's a 20% chance to win the series. In fact, somebody tweeted me, was very, very upset, and they said that I'm the worst, which may be true. That I don't know. Said that I am such a blank tool. Even if you believe it, you never say that the team you represent is going to get swept. We get that being outrageous is your whole thing because you have no other personality, but at this point, you're just a blemish on Nashville sports radio. I'd argue being a sports radio station that doesn't talk about the Predators is probably more of a blemish than me. Also, I didn't say they were going to get swept. I'd say they have a 20% chance of winning. So, Adam, let's start with that. What kind of percent chance do you give the Predators of winning this series against Carolina, and why?
I might give them slightly higher odds than 20%. I think over at The Athletic, we have our analytically inclined preview. Hold on. I know how you feel about that word, but we have our analytically specific previews, and I believe we give the Hurricanes a 65% chance of winning the series, so a 35% chance for the Predators. I might split the difference. I might say around 25% the Predators have a chance of winning this series, but I still believe that the Hurricanes will be a heavy favorite. I expect the Hurricanes to ultimately win the series. I think it will be a competitive series, though. I do not think the Predators will be terribly outmatched like we thought they might be based on the first six games of this season against the Hurricanes. I thought the Saturday game provided a blueprint of sorts in terms of what the Predators can do to make this series competitive. So you say 20%. The Athletic says 35%. I'll meet it somewhere in the middle. I'll say 25%.
So I do believe what you said about that Saturday game probably matters a little bit. You know, I went to that game. I felt like I argued with you before it. I feel like that Saturday game did, you know, it proved that the Predators can beat Carolina. I don't take anything away from Monday night's game. It was a great story. It was a great game. Move on. But I keep going back to what we talked about after those two games at Carolina happened, where it felt like for periods at a time, Carolina put together some of the most dominant hockey we have seen against the Predators all season long. And I'm trying not to get too trapped into what happened Saturday night and saying, yeah, the Predators are tough enough, they're fast enough, they're big enough, they're strong enough to go up against the Carolina Hurricanes, when outside of goaltending, I'm not sure what advantages the Predators have. And I certainly remember those two games at Carolina, and that makes me pause on getting excited about last Saturday night's game. How much do you take away from those four games in the last month?
Yeah, I would agree that I would basically toss Monday's game. It was essentially a preseason game. We did see, however, the Predators ratchet up the physicality in that game, perhaps a bit of message sending or tone setting, as we like to say in sports. And I do think the physicality aspect will be important in the series. Of those two games in Raleigh in April, I believe it was the second of the two, the Predators allowed 24 shots on goal, I think, in the first period, and 48 for the game. And if I recall correctly, at the end of the game, the Predators had surrendered more than 20 shots from the slot, where most goals are scored. In the game on Saturday, they allowed 10 over three periods. So there was a drastic improvement in terms of protecting the middle of the ice, the areas that John Hines talks a lot about in terms of his defensive zone structure. So it appears that improvements were made there. It is an interesting series in a lot of aspects, and I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of it in the next hour. You know, one thing that stands out to me is on defense, because usually when you're going into a series against the Nashville Predators and you're looking at breakdowns of the series, and they'll do forwards advantage so-and-so, you know, goaltending advantage so-and-so. Oftentimes when it's defense, it's advantage Nashville. This might be the series where the Predators may have met their match in terms of the defensive depth on the other side. You know, very few defensive cores, the top three defensemen, very few can equal what Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, and Ryan Ellis can do. But the but the Hurricanes have Dougie Hamilton, Jacob Slavin, and Brett Pesce, who I think are just as good. So I feel like an advantage that's typically in the Predators' favor might have been neutralized. So we'll need to see those three defensemen in particular, Josi, Ekholm, and Ellis, play even better. But ultimately, I feel like the team was still, even though the team was playing better in mid-April, they were still sort of figuring things out. You know, I feel like the game on Monday is a better representation of what we should expect to see in the series than what we did earlier in the season.
I mean, I look at Carolina, and the one thing that I feel like maybe doesn't get talked about enough, I'm not one that constantly wants to go back to 2017, but I do feel like in 2017, we looked at the Chicago Blackhawks, and we knew three-time Cup champions, star players, knocked out the Predators in the past. We looked at, in 2018, we knew the Winnipeg Jets were a really, really good team. I look at Carolina, and maybe I don't feel like the fans understand just how good Carolina is. That if they were to play the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round, let's say the Lightning had the season the Hurricanes had, we'd be talking about the defending Cup champions and Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos and Braden Point and Andre Vasilevsky, maybe the best goalie in the world. I don't feel like we're doing that enough with Carolina. When you look at their roster and you see guys like Sebastian Aho and Tara Vinen and Trocheck and Dougie Hamilton, and they have a stacked roster, and they are a good team, Adam.
They are a very good team. There are few, if any, glaring weaknesses or weaknesses at all about the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, perhaps the one question mark is in goal, but Alex Nedeljkovic had a great season. I'm filling out my awards ballots, you know, this weekend, and Nedeljkovic will certainly be in the Calder Trophy conversation for myself as I fill out that ballot. You're right. You mentioned so many good players up front. You know, Jordan Staal, their captain, has been there and done that. You know, he was with the Pittsburgh Penguins when they were winning Stanley Cups, you know, 10 years ago. He's been a great player. I just talked about the defense, and this is a team that has been on the rise. They've been that trendy preseason pick for several years now. You know, in the 2018-19 season, I think they made it to the conference. They made it to the conference final. I guess they would have lost to Boston before Boston lost to St. Louis. So they beat the Capitals 1 year. I think the year after the Capitals, that was the same year. The year that the Capitals were the defending Stanley Cup champions, they knocked out the Capitals in the first round. So they're sort of like the Predators, you know, 5-6 years ago. You know, they're getting that postseason experience after missing the playoffs for like a decade in a row. Yeah, they're a great team. I mean, if the Carolina Hurricanes win the Stanley Cup, I will not be surprised in the slightest.
How critical do you think it is to take game one or two in Carolina in order for the Preds to win the series?
Well, they're going to have to win one game on the road to win the series. So, you know, we see the statistics all the time. When a team wins game one on the road, they win the series blank, you know, percent of the time. And oftentimes it's in favor of the team that wins game one. So, you know, with any playoff series, you know, think about what the Predators did in 2017. Correct me if I'm wrong. They won game one on the road in each of the first three series. They won in Chicago, they won in St. Louis, and they won in Anaheim. You know, and that played a significant role in getting them to the Stanley Cup final. So yes, absolutely. You know, if they can split games one and two, come home tied at one on a Friday night with 12,000 plus fans, you know, they're setting themselves up for a competitive series.
Adam Vigan is our guest on the program. How important do you think, for the Predators' sake, how important do you think UC Saros stealing games is? How many games do you think he's going to have to steal?
Oh, that's a good question. I think he's going to have to steal at least two. And by steal, think about the first Florida game they played. I think it was the end of April, right? They played Florida on Monday and Tuesday. They lost the second game 7-4, but they won that first game 4-1. And they had absolutely no business winning that game. The Florida Panthers were the better team from start to finish, and UC Saros saved their bacon. You're going to have at least two of those types of games from UC Saros, I think, for the Predators to win this series. I think, you know, he's not going to, I mean, we've been saying, well, he's not going to be a 940 goalie forever. Well, he's been a 940 goalie for 2 months. And I think what's beneficial for UC versus this time last year is he played really well in the second half of last season, and then he was off for 4 months, which, you know, stunted that momentum. He's carrying that momentum into the postseason this time. There is a week off, but it isn't 4 months. So I think that should be beneficial. We know, of course, he was not great against the Arizona Coyotes. But now that he's had that experience, because there's not a huge break in between the regular season and the postseason, I think, you know, the confidence in him to play well in the postseason is there. And like I said, I think he's going to have to absolutely rob the Hurricanes of two games in this series, at least, if the Predators are going to win.
Adam Vingan is with us, 615-737-1025. If you have a question for Adam, get him in. We'll have that at the end of the hour. But coming up next, John Hines hinted at the lineup change today on the morning show. What does Adam think of Eli Tolvanen maybe not being in the lineup? And what does he think about Dante Fabbro maybe not being in the lineup? We'll get to that next. Fireball Hot Take Friday. We are live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 1025 The Game. Let me tell the fine folks out there that they will have their opportunity. That's right, the exclusive opportunity ESPN 1025 The Game will have next week. We'll be on the road with your chance to win tickets to Game 3 and Game 4 of Round 1 of the Stanley Cup playoffs between the Predators and the Carolina Hurricanes. Monday, we'll be live at Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville from 2 to 6. Wednesday, live at the new Party Fowl in Cool Springs from 2 to 6. And Thursday, we'll be live at Social Furniture from 2 to 6. So you'll have your chance to win a pair of tickets for Games 3 and 4. Stillman and Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming the Game Nashville app.
You know, I think he was he really got some traction there, and then he got hurt. And then since he's come back off his injury, I know he's working and trying. We're working with him. But, you know, he hasn't had the same impact as he's had 5-on-5 or on the power play. So, you know, I think it's the combination of the coaches trying to help the player, but, you know, it ultimately comes down to the player being able to play at a level that we feel he's going to be able to help us win. So, you know, that'll be a decision we'll have to make, whether he's in or out.
That was John Hines today on Eli Tolvanen talking about, hey, since he's come back from injury, he was not the player he was. And again, one goal, two assists, and might be scratched in Game 1. We've also talked a lot about Dante Fabbro maybe being scratched in Game 1. Adam, I took the pros and the cons. Adam Vingan with us. I took the pros and the cons here, and I think the pros far outweigh the cons. If Tolvanen gets it going, then I believe that the Predators have an asset that they would not have otherwise, which would be Brad Richardson or Nick Cousins or Rocco Grimaldi. I also think the Predators have almost no power play without Eli Tolvanen, and I believe that you ride the horse that got you there. I believe with Dante Fabbro, he's got his issues, but he's better than Eric Goodbranson. He's better than Ben Harper, and at the end of the day, you have invested a lot into Dante Fabbro, into becoming a player that he maybe hasn't become yet, but he's certainly better than those other guys. What do you think of the possibility of both those guys being scratched Monday night? Do you think it's a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, we can start with Eli Tolvanen, and John Hines, when he spoke to the media this afternoon, said the same thing about Eli Tolvanen that he did this morning with Joe and Mark. I would agree with you that I would prefer if the Predators kept Eli Tolvanen in the lineup, particularly because of the power play. The five-man unit of Tolvanen, Josi, Johansson, Granlund, and Forsberg was among the best five-man power play units in the league in terms of the amount of goals they scored. And we know that the power play in the past, in the playoffs, has been an issue. But I also agree with John that the 5-on-5 play has slipped since Tolvanen came back from injury. You know, one name that you didn't mention who most likely would replace Eli Tolvanen is Victor Arvidsson. So they're not necessarily downgrading by removing Eli Tolvanen and replacing him with Victor Arvidsson. But I would, you know, I just go back to the power play. Not that Arvidsson is an unproductive power play player, but the dual threat that Tolvanen and Forsberg have given the Predators on the circles, on the power play, you know, has really made that unit one of the best in the league. With Fabro, it was telling that in the Saturday game, the playoff clinching game against Carolina, he was out of the lineup and he was scratched in favor of Matt Benning. Alex Carrier has surpassed, at least for now, Dante Fabro on the depth chart. So Carrier has played exceptionally well. He compliments Matthias Ekholm. You know, Dante Fabro, we remember he came out of college. He played like one or two games. Actually, I think he played four games in the regular season, in the 18-19 season, then played six games against the Stars in the playoffs. I actually thought he played pretty well in that Stars series, you know, paired with Dan Hamhuis on the third pair, you know, considering that he had basically no NHL experience. So, you know, I don't think there's any concern that if those players were scratched in game one, that, you know, they would harbor ill will. You know, they're still developing. This is professional sports. Also, John Hines and David Poile both stressed today that the game one lineup may not be the game two lineup. So if Eli Tolvanen doesn't play in game one, he might be back in game two. So that would be my suggestion for people perhaps overreacting to the idea that Eli Tolvanen might not be in the lineup for game one.
You don't think that Fabro would take issue with being out of the lineup? I mean, I only say this because he's going to be a restricted free agent. They're going to have a decision to make on exposing him to the expansion draft, which I don't think they will. But it definitely feels like his star has dimmed, at least the way that I view Dante Fabro. But I'm starting to wonder if his star has dimmed for them. And they have made a heavy investment in Fabro all along the way. I mean, first-round pick, then they trade Sam Girard because they know they have him coming down the pipe. Then they sign him out of college and stick him in the playoffs. Then they trade P.K. Subban and move him up to a top-four defenseman role. I mean, they've got a lot of skin in the game on Dante Fabro. And I don't know Fabro. You probably know him better than I do. I look at a 22-year-old or 23-year-old being told, hey, we think that Eric Goodbranson or Matt Benning is a better fit for us in a playoff game than you. And I think, you know, I would assume he probably thinks he's better than those two guys. I can see some resentment. It's hard for me to see a 23-year-old or a 22-year-old really believing that the organization believes in him if they bench him for Eric Goodbranson.
Well, sort of like what we talked about with Tolvanen, we talked about this, you know, earlier in the season when Tolvanen was really coming on. We've been talking about Eli Tolvanen for so long that we thought that you could be excused for thinking that he was much older than he actually is. He just turned 22 years old. And the same thing can be applied to Dante Fabro. You know, he played 4 years at Boston University, or 3 years. You know, he came in at the end of the 19 playoffs. He's been a member of this team now for a couple of years. He's 22 years old. He'll be 23 next month. So, you know, he was thrown into the deep end. I mean, he came in, and remember those games at the end of the 18-19 season, those meant something. You know, they needed those games to win the Central Division. Sure. Then he's in the playoffs. Then they trade PK Subban, and David Poile says at the draft, after talking about the trade, that if not for feeling comfortable with Dante Fabro, they probably wouldn't have traded PK Subban. So, you know, he's been thrown into the deep end, and he's had his share of rookie mistakes. But from how I know Dante, I do not expect this to be something that will tarnish the relationship between them. At the end of the day, he still is a young kid, albeit one who, as you said, the Predators have invested a lot in, but they also invested a lot in Eli Tolvanen, and that's paying dividends. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be a long-term issue if Dante Fabro is out of the lineup at any point during the playoffs.
Do you think they've lost, I don't want to say lost faith in him, but do you think they've lost the belief in him that he was going to be with everything that they have done prior to now?
I don't think so. I still see Dante Fabro being a member of this team long term. I mean, what's interesting this offseason, he is a restricted free agent, and if I'm not mistaken, he is eligible for arbitration. And you know, those cases are always interesting to watch, because basically the team has to go in. If it gets to arbitration — it doesn't always get to arbitration, but if it does get to arbitration, you know, I remember talking to Rocco Grimaldi after he signed re-signed with the Predators, and he went to arbitration, and he was talking about how, you know, the team had to go in there and basically badmouth him because they're trying to make the case that he deserves less than he wants. So you always want to avoid those situations. But no, I don't think it's a huge deal. I mean, I understand how important he has been in terms of being a regular in the lineup, but you know, I would try not to overreact. It's interesting, certainly, but I don't think it's the end of the world by any stretch.
I just think it's amazing that we can sit here and say, okay, if they scratch Fabro and Tolvanen, then they'll still be okay with it. And maybe they will be. If this were basketball, like if this were the NBA and the coach was like, we need more post players tonight, so we're going to scratch you. I mean, that guy would unfollow the team on social media and would demand a trade immediately. Now, maybe basketball is just a different sport, I find it hard to believe that all these young guys are going to – and now maybe it's great. Maybe it speaks to the character of the organization that these guys can sit there and do it. Derrick Henry sat on the bench for 2 years. Now, he did it behind DeMarco Murray. But Derrick Henry sat on the bench and didn't complain. Ryan Tannehill was a backup and didn't complain. Maybe it's something like that. But I have a hard time seeing there not be – ramifications for those kind of actions. That's just me.
Well, think about it this way. Let's use Elie Tolvanen specifically as an example. Don't you think that if Elie Tolvanen was going to resent the Predators, don't you think it would have happened already, considering how many years he spent in the American League?
Sure.
He was a hot shot prospect. He went to the Olympics. He set KHL rookie scoring records. He was, you know, everything like that. You know, we know all about the hype that he received when he signed and all of that. And you would think that a player like that, with all of those accolades at a young age, if he really was going to have it out for the organization, it would have happened already. The fact that he was patient and diligent and worked at the American League and got this opportunity says to me that this is not going to be an issue. I use this example a lot, but when Kevin Fiala became a member of the organization, he had a rough time in the American League to start. The funnier story is that he was suspended by the American League for conduct detrimental because during a game, he gave the opposing bench the finger at a game that was held at like 11 a.m. so school kids could come and watch. And Dean Evason, then the coach of the Admirals, now the coach of the Minnesota Wild, you know, healthy scratched him and had very hard conversations. Basically, you know, if you're not going to play the right way and you're not going to have a good attitude, I'm not going to keep, you know, placating you. That was never an issue with Elie Tolvanen. So I'm not worried about that with Elie Tolvanen. I'm not worried about that with Dante Fabro either. I'm just saying that in Tolvanen's case, if he was going to have a reason to have it out for the team, it would have happened already.
Yeah. Adam Vingan with us from The Athletic, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Get your questions in for Adam on the text line. We will get to those at the end of the hour. But we saw things we didn't expect in 2017. Ryan Johansson dominating Jonathan Toews was one of them. Colton Sissons with a hat trick in the Western Conference Final. In order to beat Carolina, what does Adam need to see that we haven't seen from the Preds yet? That's next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 1025 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Hey, Coach, your guys have talked probably for the last month or so at least about how they felt that they've already been in that playoff mentality and playing playoff hockey to try and clinch a spot. I know every team seems to raise their level at this time of the year, but how do you view that situation? Do you need to emphasize that anymore to your team? Do you feel like they're already there?
Well, I think it's really about preparing for the Carolina series. And part of it is understanding how we played, the mentality we play with, the consistency level that we played with, not get too high, not get too low, but the readiness we need to be able to play with. And I think that's the focus. It's not so much what happened in the regular season. That's in the past. Both teams have a reset. Regular season's over. We both have the same amount of time to get ready for the series. So, you know, our focus has to be on not what happened. I think we've taken the lessons from that, but now it's an opportunity for us to get even better.
There you go. That was John Hines on the playoff mentality. Adam Vingan is with us on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Adam, we all remember 2017. I had a texter text in earlier today that said, mark my words, Jared, I think that Ryan Johansson is going to be as dominant as he was in 2017 against Jonathan Toews. And I said, that's wishful thinking. That is like if this were the Titans and you were to say, I think that Corey Davis is going to go out there and be the next Calvin Johnson. It just was never going to happen. So here's my question for you. What have we not seen from the 2021 Nashville Predators that you have to see in this Carolina series for them to win it?
I know this is going to be an unoriginal answer, but earlier you were rattling off all of the top forwards on the Carolina Hurricanes. Aho, Svechnikov, Trocheck, Niederreiter, Teravainen, Jordan Staal, you know, all players who have stepped up and helped the Hurricanes have one of their best seasons and compete for a President's Trophy. We talked about Elie Tolvanen. We've talked about Tanner Jeannot. We've talked about the Cali Yarncroke, Mikael Granlund's Luke Cunningham line. We've talked about Eric Hollis stepping up after the trade deadline. Who haven't we talked about? We haven't talked about Philip Forsberg. We haven't talked about Ryan Johansson, and we haven't talked about Matt Duchene. I just want to put this into perspective. I have it up right in front of me. Ryan Johansson played 48 games this season. He had 14 points at 5-on-5 in 48 games.
That is Matt, $2 million a point.
Matt Duchene.
Excuse me. No, that's 500 grand a point. My bad.
Math is not my strong suit either.
Not on Matt the air. Duchene, don't do math.
Matt Duchene played 34 games. He was injured, of course, for 6 weeks. 9 points at 5-on-5. 4 goals, 5 assists. look, we've talked a lot about, and when we go back to 2017, it's a too convenient storyline. That we go back to 2017 and we talk about, you know, the Harry Zolnerchucks and the Cody McLeods, the Vernon Fiddlers, the Austin Watsons, and the Predators have those players. They have, you know, your Luke Cunnins, your Tanner Jeannots, your Yakov Trenins. They still have Colton Sissons who played a role in that too. But you still had big series from Philip Forsberg. Ryan Johansson was awesome before he was injured. Ryan Ellis, you know, had a really big postseason that year too, playing on a bad knee.
PK Subban,
Matias Ekholm. I'm not worried about the defensemen. I'm looking at those three forwards in particular. I don't think Philip Forsberg has looked great since he's been back from injury. We were talking about that with Tolvanen and Fabbro, and the fact that Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene combined for 23 points this season at 5-on-5, despite making a combined $16 million a season. I know we talk about it all the time, but they need to step up. That's the one thing I need to see. And they scored a combined 3 goals on Monday. Duchene had 2, Johansson had 1. But we talked about how we don't read too much into that game. Perhaps it helps them with confidence in knowing the puck is going into the net. And Matt Duchene said that this week with Robbie and Rexroad. But at the end of the day, it has to be those players. You can throw Victor Arvidsson in there too. You have to see more from the high-paid players, the high-paid forwards specifically, if this team is going to stand a chance.
Why are they struggling so much? I mean, Johansson, it's not like we haven't seen it. It's not like we haven't seen it with Matt Duchene. I mean, if this were baseball and we were to take Ryan Johansson's 2017 or we were to take Matt Duchene's 2019, I'd probably accuse them of taking steroids. You know, it's like, oh, hey, you hit 300 with 37 bombs. Next year, 213, 8 homers. Huh. I wonder how that happened. It's like Greg Vaughn. You see his career. It's like 20 homers, 19 homers, 13 homers, 56. Like, okay, why? Why are these guys struggling? I mean, I think Duchene plays hard. I think Duchene cares. Why?
Yeah, if I had the answer to that question, I would be making a lot more money than I am right now. And that's certainly something that I'm sure John Hines and David Poyle and management and coaches have been talking about. You know, when Matt Duchene left the lineup in early March, his shooting percentage was the lowest of his career. And we talked about this a lot in January. He was creating a ton of chances, but not scoring. And that sort of, you know, for the most part, that's been his MO. I mean, he's had 30 goal seasons, but he's a great play. He can be a good play driver, but he's not the greatest finisher. And I feel like perhaps that turned once he came back in terms of, I mean, he ended up with a shooting percentage of 8.2, which I think still might be, you know, one of the worst of his career, if not the worst. With Johansson, like, I mean, I've been thinking about this for years. I mean, I really don't know what it is. And I wish I had a better answer for you, but the Predators have invested a ton of money and capital into these players, and they have not lived up to their end of the bargain.
I will say this to my take on this, the idea of what has to happen. The more I watch Luke Cunningham, the more I like Luke Cunningham. I think he's a good player. Like, I don't think he's a great player or anything like that, but I think he's a good player. You know, he's a top six forward who can center a line. You can put him up on the first line. He can score. He can, you know, handle the puck. He can pass. I look at Luke Cunningham and I wonder, okay, we're banking on Philip Forsberg doing something offensively for this team. We are hoping and praying that Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson do something, but probably not expecting it. I think, like, the expectation is, okay, Granlund and Forsberg are probably guys you can count on right now to score. I think Cunningham is kind of starting to go in that direction. Am I crazy?
No, you're not, because we've talked about, and John Hines has talked about this as well, how the players who were injured, they came back into the lineup and they had to raise their level of play to keep up with everybody else. And I think Luke Cunningham is number one on that list in terms of the impact he made post-injury versus pre-injury. He finished the season with 10 goals. He had two in late February when he was injured. And I believe he scored both of those goals in, like, the first game of the season, or the first and second game of the season. He was a completely different player once he came back from injury. And I believe it was John Hines who called him an identity player. When you think about the type of team the Predators want to be, I think Luke Cunningham in a lot of ways exemplifies it. You laid it out well as you described it. You know, he can play on your top six. He played center at various points of the season, but he's been the right winger on the line with Granlund and Yarncroke. You know, he hasn't gotten a ton of special teams time, but he can play on special teams. He scores big goals. He gets in front of the net. He's not afraid to mix it up. He's got that edge to his game. You know, if I'm thinking of a player who best exemplifies what the Predators want to be under John Hines, Luke Cunningham might be the number one player I point to, because he really can do a little bit of everything at 5-on-5. So no, you're not crazy at all. I think he's going to play a big part in this if the Predators win.
Adam Vingan is with us. 615-737-1025. Calls and texts, get him in. We will go right to you next with your thoughts on this series. Your questions for Adam Vingan, 615-737-1025. Again, game one Monday night right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And I would say Adam may be the happiest guy in the world that all of the games are not at 9:30. That I pretty much feel very confident in. 615-737-1025. It's a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan is with us again. Game number one right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game for the Preds and the Canes. I will have my five-part plan for how the Predators knock off the Canes. That coming up at 5 o'clock. But it is time for you. Questions for Adam Vingan, 615-737-1025. And our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jaden is going to kick us off. Jaden, you're on with Adam Vingan. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I hope you all are having a good day. Yep. Adam and Jared, I have a question for both of you. Sure. This is kind of looking far into the offseason, but who do you guys think the Preds are going to give up in the expansion draft? And that's all I got. Hope you all have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. Jaden, let me stay for the record. And I'm not knocking the caller here because that's a fair call. I hate expansion draft talk. And we will do it on this show, but I hate it. I hate, like, if it's the week before the expansion draft, fine. If we got a legitimate players that people care about, like a James Neal versus Cali Yarncroak kind of thing, fine. If we're going to do this thing like before a trade deadline, it's like, what goalie with NHL experience are they going to put out there to see? Oh, my goodness gracious. I'm sure PredsBloggingFandom.com will have that all covered for you. Adam, your thoughts?
It's going to be a hard decision. And I would have to wait until the postseason. I mean, we talked a lot about it. I've written about it more than once. A lot of fans want one of Duchene or Johansson to be exposed and potentially taken, but the likelihood of the Seattle Kraken just taking them and not asking for more, it seems low. So, you know, it's funny. I did a mailbag the other day for The Athletic, and I got a ton of questions about the expansion draft, but I purposely left them out because this is the playoffs. I want to talk about the playoffs. So, ask me again in July when the expansion draft is nearing and we'll talk more about it.
Like, why does nobody call about the Titans and say, hey, Jared, who do you think the Titans are going to franchise tag next year? Like, I don't get it. I don't, whatever. That's just me. Text line 615-737-1025. Caroline Fenton's on that. What we got, Caroline?
Garland texted in and said, do you think the Herd line will be a major force in this series? They can skate, hit, and score.
They better be if the Preds are going to win.
Yeah. Have you noticed that for the last several weeks, every time the Predators start a game, it's that line on the ice?
I mean, I have noticed that.
That is on purpose, of course, because that line is the identity line. It, you know, to use the old sports terrible cliche I used earlier, sets the tone for what the team wants to do. That line has been very good. They've scored a lot of goals despite tough matchups. When we talked about ramping up the physicality against the Hurricanes, that line is going to lead that charge, no pun intended, with the Herd line. But yes, absolutely. It has to be as good as it's been since March. It's probably going to be Trenin, Sissons, and Janot. We should not overlook the contributions of Matthew Olivier before he was injured and Tanner Janot came in. But yes, that line is going to be very important.
So I have a theory on this, and I think that Forsberg, Johansson, Duchene, Yarncroak, Granlund, Holla, Cunnan, and the Herd line are all locks to make the lineup on game one. So basically, you've got, by that estimation, two spots for Tolvanen, Cousins, Richardson, Rocco, and Arvidsson. Now, I would put in Tolvanen. I don't think he's going to put in Tolvanen. I think it's going to be Richardson and I don't know what Arvidsson's percentage is. I would put in Cousins. And the reason I would do this is because I do feel that the one thing I feel like the Herd line gives me is in games one and two in Carolina, I don't feel like there's a line that Rod Brind'Amour, when he throws out his first line, is automatically going to try and go take advantage of. Now, I know defense pairings, once if Ben Harper or Eric Goodbranson or whatever, if they pop over the boards, he's sending Aho out on the ice. But I don't think there's a line that you would put on the ice that you would worry about defensively if you have Cousins and Richardson out there.
Yeah, I see your point. I mean, of those five, if we're going, the two that I would think are most likely to play of those five would be Victor Arvidsson and Brad Richardson. I think Brad Richardson, at least for now, has passed Nick Cousins, and I could see him on that line with Holla and Duchene as he's been in recent games. And then you can reunite the Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson triumvirate. But I see your point. Matchups are important. I think the Yarncroak, Granlund, Cunnan line is a defensively responsible line as well. You can use that line to counteract some of the Hurricanes' firepower. But if we're picking two of those five that you listed, I would say Arvidsson and Richardson.
I just don't think Arvidsson's done anything. And, like, I know he's hurt, but we're talking about, Ellie Tolvanen's come back in the lineup and he hasn't done anything. I really feel like Arvidsson, whatever Bortuzzo did to him in St. Louis a year and a half ago, he has never been the same player since then. And maybe you're banking on the playoff experience, but his playoff experience hasn't been very good. I'm not here to complain about Victor Arvidsson today, but I just don't feel like if we're not going to give Elie Tolvanen a spot for single-handedly turning the season around, you know, on the power play, why would I put Victor Arvidsson out there? He's little, and quite frankly, he's not a great playoff player and hasn't played well lately.
Well, my argument back would be, I know a lot of fans, when Matt Duchene came back from injury, or when it was announced that he was coming back from injury, a lot of fans said, why would we put him back in? Matt Duchene was always going back in the lineup. I think you can say the same about Victor Arvidsson. When Victor Arvidsson is healthy, John Hines is going to play him. Whether, you know, history be damned, he's going to play.
Sure. What else in there, Caroline?
Kyle texted in with a hot take.
Okay.
It is Fireball Hot Take Friday. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. He said, if Arvidsson has another disappointing playoff appearance this year, I think we should move on from him this offseason. He's 28 and essentially only shows up to play in the regular season.
It's almost like somebody said maybe giving a seven-year contract was a little too much and everybody got mad about it. I don't know. Adam, your thoughts.
He's a 30-goal scorer, Jared.
He was.
If I recall correctly, since he signed that contract, which was the summer of 2017, yes, I believe he is the Predators' leading goal scorer since the 17-18 season. And I know that the bubble didn't have the feeling of real playoffs, but he had 3 goals in 4 games. I know that they did not win the series. I'm looking at his statistics now. He had 9 points in 13 playoff games in 17-18. He had 13 points in 22 playoff games in 16-17. So he's had 12 goals, 27 points in 59 career playoff games. It's not terrible.
No, but, and a game winner, a huge game winner against San Jose in 2016.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say he's been a poor playoff performer. You would want to have more from him for sure. But the thing about Arvidsson that is attractive, if the Predators wanted to go that route, is his contract. I mean, he's a multi-time 30-goal scorer who's making $4.25 million against the cap. I mean, that's relatively inexpensive for a player with his track record. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but if they go down that road, that works to their benefit.
Let's go to Adam, who is up next. 615-737-1025. I'm afraid that what this is going to be about, but Adam is up next here on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Go ahead, Adam.
He already knows what it's going to be about. So I'm
going to be about Rocco, isn't it?
I'm unsatisfied with Jared's answer on this. So, Adam, if you could explain to me why Rocco Grimaldi is on the bench, please, because I don't understand it. Jared can tell me over and over that he's not good enough. What's he not good enough at? You know, like, I cannot understand somebody who hits 4 goals in a night, looks unstoppable, fastest guy on the ice, and then you pull him off and don't play him anymore. I could think of 3 or 4 dudes I'd rather see Rocco in front of, and he's not getting playing time. And Jared's convinced me he's not going to play in the playoffs, you know, the first couple games at least. So I'm scared of that, and I want to know why.
Thank you, Adam.
Well, it's interesting because he did have that 4-goal game, and that was a great game. And we saw the goal. We saw the goal that he scored against the Hurricanes on Monday. That was a really nice shorthanded rush, turned Peter Mrazek inside out. But just because, you know, we used an NBA analogy earlier, you know, if someone might score 50 points in one game, but you know, it doesn't always mean that they're going to score 50 the next night. And the thing about Rocco Grimaldi, is he's a defensive liability. He is not when he is on the ice, the Predators analytically, there's that word again, are much worse defensively than when he's off the ice. And I think despite the fact that he brings a lot of energy, we saw how he played against Dallas. He was the best forward on the team in that playoff series. Yes, he scored 4 goals, but when he's not doing that, he doesn't really bring a ton on the defensive end. He's actually, you know, a hindrance to this team defensively. So that, and if John Hines wants this team to play well defensively, there are other players who play better defensively that are available than Rocco Grimaldi.
I feel like people get mad at me sometimes because I'm blunt. You know, like the tone of what it is. It's like, why is Rocco Grimaldi not going to play? Because he's not good enough. You know, like I hate to be like that guy, but he's not good enough and he's not big enough. He's listed at 5'6". And we're talking about a series in which they're going to have to really rough it up. I mean, I said this earlier, Adam, you know, of that group we were talking about, Tolvanen, Cousins, Richardson, Rocco, and Arvidsson, Brad Richardson might be the worst hockey player of that group. You know, as far as if I were starting a team.
He's definitely the oldest.
He's definitely the oldest. He might be the worst hockey player of the group. And yet I still would think he's going to play in this series because he's bigger and he's physical and he has the experience. And, I mean, to your point, Rocco is the kind of guy, when Rocco was the best player, best skater for the Predators in the 2019 series against Dallas, I thought that was more of an indictment on the team than it was more about how well Rocco played. And I'm not here to knock on Rocco.
It was a nice story.
Sure.
But yeah, but like when we were looking back at the series and we were thinking about the players that stepped up for the Stars and thinking about the players who didn't step up for the Predators, you know, we talked about how great Rocco was. Well, it was like, where was everybody else? You know, you're right when you say that.
That was probably my favorite call of the day. Oh, Fireball Hot Take Friday. Before we get you out of here, Adam, I don't know. Do you have to wait on an athletic piece, or can you tell us what your prediction for this series is and how many games?
I have made my prediction. I have said Hurricanes in six. I think the Predators will be competitive. I think UC Saros steals at least one game. We talked about two. I think he steals at least one game. The Predators make it interesting, but I just think that up top to bottom, Carolina is a better team. And I think the Predators will give them a run for their money, but I still see the Hurricanes coming out on top.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic, as always, joining us in the program. My gut tells me, Adam, that you'll probably be on like three times next week. If I get a say in it,
if you're going to be at Boomba's on Monday, I live down the street. So just let me know.
So Adam might be with us on Monday. Who knows? Adam,
see you on Monday.
Appreciate you, Adam.
Bye, guys.
Yep, Adam Vingan on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. I have not decided when to give my official prediction. I'm thinking I should give it today and not Monday.
I think that sounds like a good idea.
Why do you think it sounds like a good idea?
Just go ahead and get it in before the weekend, before everyone has all their chatter. Just go ahead and get your prediction locked in.
Well, I think if you listen to this show, you probably know how I'm going to predict this series. The question is, like, if I start the show on Monday predicting the Canes to win the series, and I'm not saying I'm going to predict that. I have not made my prediction yet. But if I start the show on Monday doing that, I don't want people to then automatically turn off the radio because they're excited to watch the game.
Right. Go ahead and get it out there, and then we can have some discussion on Monday.
So we'll see. Anywho, I've got a 5-point plan for the Predators to beat the Carolina Hurricanes. Five. We'll get to all five next. Stillman and Company, hey, it's moving season. We're delivered by TriStar Moving, and you should be too. If you're looking to move, you need to give my friends at TriStar Moving a call. At TriStar Moving, you'll get 5-star service throughout the entire process. Everything is taken care of with TriStar Moving, covering the floors, banisters, railings, front door thresholds. They'll wrap and protect all of your furniture and put your TVs in protective boxes. They took great care of my move, and they made it as stress-free as possible. And I promise they'll do the same for you. They have a brand new state-of-the-art storage facility in Mount Juliet. So if you've got a bunch of stuff you need to have stored, they're your guys. Their owners, Garrett and Robert, are true Nashvillians, and they care about helping this community immensely. If you're looking to move, give my friends at TriStar Moving a call, 615-640-1219, or visit their website, nashvillemoving.org/radio. They'll give you 5% off your entire move. That's TriStar Moving, 615-640-1219, nashvillemoving.org/radio. Tell them Jared Stillman sent you. My official movers, that's TriStar Moving.